This episode of God Calling with Deacon Ken Piachowski was recorded before his wife, Linda, passed away on Monday, May 15th. Please keep Deacon Ken and Linda in your prayers. May Linda's soul and the souls of all the faithful departed rest in peace. Amen.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now, here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Welcome once again to God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. I hope you'll join us each and every time at this very same time here on AM 1260 The Rock. Our guest today is Deacon Ken Piachowski. And Deacon, you've been a deacon a very, very long time, since 1981.
Yes, I have.
Boy, that's the year I got to Cleveland.
Well, it was a good year.
We had a good draft that year.
Yes, we did.
Oh, dear. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small neighborhood, St. Hyacinth Parish, a North Slavic Village area of Cleveland. So that's where I went to grade school, and that's where I had grown up.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your family.
Well, I'm an only child, so I have no brothers and sisters. I met my wife, Linda, who was also had gone to St. Hyacinth's grade school, so we grew up in the same neighborhood. So we are now married 54 years, and we have five children. It's been just a wonderful marriage, a wonderful family, fantastic. Children are all over the place. I have one that lives in Atlanta, another one that lives in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. The rest are in the general area of the greater Cleveland area.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, the Latrobe connection, which we'll probably get into a little bit later. But how'd you meet your wife?
Well, actually, I had met her through a good friend of mine. We known each other a little bit in grade school because I was a year ahead of her, but I can say that we really didn't know each other that well.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a senior at Benedictine High School, we had an opportune, a mutual friend who introduced me to her, and she was my date for the homecoming that year.
Oh, okay.
And in some respects, the rest is history.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
for sure.
Yeah.
Now, before you met your wife, how old were you roughly?
Well, I guess I met Linda when I was about 17 years old.
Okay. So what I was going to ask was, any kind of calls to her, any sort of religious life before you met Linda?
Oh, yeah. I had, as I was growing up, I was a mass server at St. Hyacinth's. I was always felt very close to the church. And I started serving mass when I was in third grade. Like I said, I was feeling a calling. I was feeling a calling to the priesthood, actually. And I had applied and was accepted to Borromeo High School. So I went to Borromeo High School for 3 years. But then I began to discern that God was probably not calling me to priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
So I left Borromeo and transferred over to Benedictine, which was a very good move for me. And it gave me the opportunity to be a part of the Benedictine community and family, which I do cherish very much. It was that senior year at Benedictine that I met Linda, but I still felt very called to be active in the church. And I had gone and began teaching back in those days. We called it CCD,
right?
PSR today. And I did that for a number of years and continued to feel like I wanted to be involved in the parish. So at St. Hyacinth's back in those years, I was a lector. I became a Eucharistic minister. I did CCD and a variety of other things around the parish. But as time went on, I stayed very close to my seminary classmates. In fact, we still get together from time. We just had a reunion last week.
Oh, wonderful.
So it was really kind of neat to see the guys. But I stayed pretty close to them over the years. And this one in particular, who at the time was a transitional deacon, he was getting preparing for ordination to the priesthood. I was working in the insurance business at that time, and I called him up, and I knew I was going to be having a lunch around the parish where he was assigned, so I asked if he'd like to get together. So we did, renewed a little bit of an acquaintance there, and we've seen each other a number of times before that. But as we finished lunch, he called me and took me over to the rectory where he was staying. And he says, you know, Ken, I've got something I think you might be interested in. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, okay, what's that? And he says, well, here's this book on this new ministry called The Permanent Diaconate.
Okay.
And I had never heard of it before then.
Uh-huh.
And he says, take that home and read it. He says, I think that might be something that would be good for you or maybe something you might be interested in pursuing. So I did. And I read it, and I really felt that he was an instrument in making me aware of the diaconate and God calling me to the diaconate. And mm-hmm. I went ahead and applied to the diaconate. At the time, I was too young, so I had to wait. And Father Pfeiffer at the time advised me to wait a year and set up a year with a spiritual director, which is what I did. And then I applied a little bit later. And Father Lieberth, who was the director of the program at that time, admitted me into the program. It was a 3-year program then. It's now a 5-year program. But at the time, he basically said, well, we'll bring you in, but you're a little bit young, so we'll have to have a dispensation from Rome for you to be ordained on time with your class, but we won't be concerned about that now. That's a few years ahead.
What is the age limit? What is the age?
We'll wait until that time. The age limit for the diaconate is age 35.
That's what I thought. Okay.
And as I understand it, I'm not sure if that's still true today, but I think it is. The local bishop can dispense for a year.
Okay.
But anything younger, anyone younger than that, needs a dispensation from Rome.
Okay. Now, where were you in your marriage at that time? How many kids?
Well, we had 4 children at the time. We were married in 1968, so this was about, 1978. So we were about 20 years into the marriage, or 10 years into. I'm losing track of my time.
That's okay.
10 years into the marriage. But... again, I was admitted and started formation. Things went very well.
It's interesting when you hear some of these vocation stories. Sometimes it's God calling, mm-hmm. the name of the show, tapping
Absolutely.
You on the shoulder. And other times it's through another person.
Many times that's the case.
And you're example A.
Yeah, many times that's the case. I mean, I really feel that many times we can be instruments in helping people identify God working in their lives. And if it wasn't for my friend Steve at the time, perhaps I eventually may have come to the diaconate. I don't know, but I always attributed my calling to the diaconate as a result of his coming to me one day and saying, hey, I think you might be interested in this.
Mm-hmm. Have you experienced that in your diaconate role, suggesting to somebody that maybe...
Oh, sure. Yeah. A lot of times. I think it's been... It's very important for us to be able to affirm people's giftedness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we see in an individual someone who we think God might be calling them to the priesthood or the diaconate or a consecrated life, I think it really is important for us to be able to encourage them and suggest to them, hey, have you ever given this a thought? And sometimes we might be the instrument that God's using mm-hmm. to bring someone to this very special vocation.
Deacon, stay right where you are. We hope all of our listeners will do the same on God Calling right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Thank you for staying tuned. This is God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock. Deacon Ken Pachowski is with us on God Calling. And they don't just open the door and say, come on in, you're a deacon now. There's some steps you have to go through, including age and obviously study. But tell me about your journey.
Well, as I said, I applied for the diaconate and was admitted. We had a 3-year period of formation. In my case, it was really 4 because I had a year of pre-formation before I even entered the program. But it's a very involved period of formation. Today, it's a 5-year program. We have people who come in are formed in academics and theology, but they're also formed in spirituality and formed in just the whole understanding of church and through the study of theology and the whole understanding of homiletics and the mm-hmm. like. So there's a pretty rigorous academic portion to it. But there are also areas, like I said, of spiritual formation and human formation as well. So it is a very involved program, but it's a very worthwhile program.
Mm-hmm. And you had to get various approvals, as you mentioned earlier.
Well, I did. In my case, I was admitted when I was very young. I was one of the youngest deacons ordained, certainly in our diocese, but maybe in the country back in the day. What had happened was that back then, we knew we would be able to be asking for a dispensation from Rome for me to be ordained. But I think in some respects, it was being taken for granted that it would be given.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't quite that easy. In January of my last year of formation, the director approached Bishop Pilla, who knew that we were going to need to be doing this. So Bishop Pilla wrote to Rome and asked for the dispensation, but it came back about 6 weeks later, and Rome wrote, "We don't really see why you should be ordaining this young man. Please give us more information."
Okay.
So the bishop very graciously went ahead and wrote a second letter. So he writes the second letter and gives them a little bit more background about me, but it comes back again about 4 or 5 weeks later, and it basically says, in a nutshell, you have not given us enough reason for us to grant this dispensation. Now, the thing is, this is March. The ordination date is on June 6th, and the bishop then calls my wife, Linda, and me into his office, and he sat down with the two of us, and he said, I will write a third letter, he said, but I have to tell you, he said, it's if they don't grant it on my third request, then we're going to have to wait until you turn 35. I was 32 at the time.
Okay.
So you have to wait until you're 35 to be able to be ordained. So he went ahead and wrote, and in the meantime, I'm continuing with the formation process. My class is going on its ordination retreat here at the middle of May, and I go on the retreat, and it was really a difficult time for me because all the rest of them are being, they're very excited about all of this, and I'm kind of down. My spiritual director happened to be on that retreat, and I sat down with my spiritual director this one day, part of the retreat, and just the two of us. And I told my spiritual director, I've really gotten to the point where I'm completely prayed out. I can't pray about this anymore. I give it over to God. If God wants it, I'm open to it. If God doesn't, I'm open to God's will for my life. Now, the thing you have to understand is that up until this point, I really felt a lot of this was my own doing. Steve gave me the book way back when to consider the diaconate. I applied. I was eventually accepted. I took to the formation program. Things were going very well. Mm-hmm. I loved the formation program. I loved the professors. I loved the whole atmosphere. Loved my fellow classmates. It was just a good time. And I'm thinking all along, I'm a decent student, and this is a lot of my doing. Then all of a sudden, I come up to the dispensation. And that dispensation really hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I can vividly remember talking to my spiritual director on that retreat and just turning everything over to God. God, if this is your will. And 2 weeks later, the dispensation comes in. I get a call from the bishop's office. Everybody, even downtown, was just very, very excited at that point. It was really a fantastic time. And I was able to be joined my classmates and ordained on June 6, 1981, and I've been blessed with 42 years of ministry. But the thing is, that set the tone for me, I really believe, because up until that time, I thought this was my doing.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that experience, it brought home to me that scripture passage, "It was not you who chose me, it was I who chose you,"
right,
"to go bear fruit." And I hope I've bared fruit for these 42 years. And I think with God's help, I have.
Going in, you were one of the youngest. Now you may be one of the longest serving.
Maybe. I mean, there's a few that have served longer than I have. We've got the Deacon Jubilees next weekend, and there's several that are into 45 years. So that's really been a great blessing to them and to all of us.
Was there doubt in those, I don't want to call them dark days, but troubling days, that maybe God doesn't want me to do this? Do those types of dark thoughts go through your brain?
I don't think I ever felt that. But what I did feel was a real deep soul searching and opening myself up to God's will for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the most important thing.
Life-changing.
Yeah, life-changing. The thing that I felt was that this is something I was pursuing, but if in the end this is not something God wanted, well, then I have to be open to that. And as our Blessed Mother said, it's not my will, but your will be done.
Yeah.
And same thing with Jesus in the agony of the garden. I mean, it's the same thing. So we have to open ourselves up to the will of God and do the best we can with the help of others to discern what God is asking us for our life.
We're going to pick that up right there because there has to be a buy-in from the spouse, and we'll talk about that
absolutely
when we come back on God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. This is God Calling, and Deacon Ken Pachowski is our guest this week, Deacon since 1981. Before we left for commercial break, we talked about the buy-in that you need from the spouse because it's a rigorous program. It's going to mean time away from the home and the kids, and then even later in life, time when the parish calls and takes you away from the home. How was Linda with this whole decision?
Well, Linda was very much supportive right from the very beginning. We had young children at that time. We knew it was going to be a challenge to be able to, in a significant time commitment with the formation, and she was very supportive. The first few years, it was difficult for her to attend very many of the classes because of the infants that we had at home. But then she began when my mother retired and was able to do a little bit of babysitting for us. But Linda was always very supportive of the idea of the diaconate. Throughout my entire ministry, she has always been very supportive of the various different things that I've been called upon to do in the diaconal ministry.
Mm-hmm. You're currently at St. John Newman?
I am.
And since 2009?
That's correct.
You know, I was down there. A story that I covered years ago was a very troubling story, which was in 2013 in the school strike.
Yes.
Lots of ruffled feathers, lots of ill will, bad feelings. But the churches, including yours, and I think it was Father Craig and Father Mamich.
Correct.
Along with some of the Protestant ministers, had a part of that healing process, or were part of that healing process. And do you recall that at all? And what was that like? Because the community was stormy skies, I guess.
It was very difficult, but I think we had we came together very very much in response there. We worked pretty carefully and closely. I shouldn't say carefully, but closely with some of the Protestant pastors in the area. We have a clergy association that meets on a regular basis. And I think that was helpful in that context. I think the mayor was very supportive also of whatever the churches could do to be able to bring some peace and reconciliation to some of the situation. I think eventually that helped to calm everything down. So, yes, I do remember that.
Yeah. It was, like I say, it was stormy skies, and you should be congratulated for that, I say. But a parish life coordinator.
Yes.
Which is an interesting, and I didn't know a lot about it. We talked about it just briefly before we went on the air. A parish life coordinator can really run a church, a parish, but not be a priest. Tell me about that.
There is a provision in canon law where a person, and it does lean toward a deacon because of our ordination, but it doesn't even necessarily have to be a deacon. It could be a layperson who could be appointed as a parish life coordinator to be in charge of the running of the parish, even though the parish may not have a resident pastor. But in that model, if I could use that term, you do need to have a priest who is called upon and appointed by the bishop to be what is termed the presbyteral moderator. And he would work closely with the parish life coordinator in the serving of the needs of the parish and the administration of the parish. It's a model that's really been developed, one of many models and numerous different types of models. And we're seeing more of these of late. Simply because we have a shortage of priests.
Sure.
And it's getting to be a little bit stronger these days. So we're coming, trying to come up with creative ways, and the church is trying to come up with creative ways to be able to address this. One of them is this approach with a parish life coordinator. I was privileged to be appointed as a parish life coordinator for my home parish where I grew up, of St. Hyacinth Parish, by Bishop Pilla. And I served in that capacity for about 10 years until the parish closed in 2009. It was a very interesting situation. We did have a significant amount of help from the neighboring priests, from St. Stanislaus, from the Benedictine community at St. Andrew's Abbey. And then, of course, Father Ted Marzell was the presbyteral moderator, so he was at Peter and Paul at that time. So he came and was very, very helpful to us. And the model did work. I think we gave that inner city parish a life of 10 years that perhaps without this model, it wouldn't have been able to happen.
Yeah.
And we served the needs of that small inner city community in a way that perhaps otherwise would not have been able to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually the parish closed. I see these as temporary situations, so that until we get into a position to either merge the parish or perhaps close the parish or come up with a different approach. But it certainly can work. We have a number of parish life coordinators in the diocese right now. And I think that's a model that the diocese will continue to look at as we go forward. There are other models, of course, too, where we have one pastor for two parishes,
sure,
sometimes even three,
right,
and that type of thing.
Clearly, you can't have a consecration or a mass, but do you reserve hosts there for a service, that sort of thing, or is there a mass each and every week?
Well, we would have the way we're structured now, and again, my experience in this goes back about 13 years, but typically the priests come and will celebrate mass at the parish. In that kind of model, you may not be able to have as many masses as you would in the past. There have been times when we could do services, but typically, you know, in many respects, that's not the ideal, but you have to do what, in effect, you can to be able to meet the needs of the people. The parish life coordinator, in the end, handles the administration of the parish as well, and that's something that is significant.
I don't know why I wrote this down in my notes when I was doing a little background on you, but following Christ with a servant's heart. Maybe that just cuts to the core of the diaconate.
That's pretty much the core of the diaconate. The whole idea behind the diaconate is to be ordained to serve. And the deacon really has three munera, if you will, of his ministry, the liturgy and the word and charity. So we serve in those three areas. We serve the liturgy in what we do in the way of our proclaiming of the gospel and preaching and assisting the priest at Mass. We serve the word, as I said, in preaching and teaching catechetics and the like. And, of course, the ministries of charity. And deacons are involved in a wide variety of ministries of charity to the poor and the sick and those incarcerated. People in a wide variety of different needs that we try our best to respond to.
I appreciate you joining us, and thank you for all those years of service.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Deacon Ken Pachowski, God bless you.
God bless you.
We hope God blesses each and every listener, and see you next week at this time.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show, or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.